ante el Congreso de los Diputados su informe anual de gobierno, donde defendió sus políticas de recortes al gasto social y habló de un futuro positivo en un país con un desempleo superior al 25%. El miércoles, el líder del partido Podemos, Pablo Iglesias, respondió al informe de Rajoy en un evento llamado El Otro Estado de la Nación.
Asumir que las reglas de la austeridad son, en definitiva, las reglas de la deflación en una economía del saqueo por la vía de la deuda. Ya está bien de que la única forma de responder a la crisis sea empeorando las condiciones laborales, privatizando los servicios públicos y bajando los salarios. Estas medidas no solo se han demostrado enormemente dolorosas para los ciudadanos, son absolutamente ineficaces. Se lo digo alto y claro, señor presidente, la austeridad no solamente provoca dolor, la austeridad es ineficaz, no funciona. Y cuando en democracia algo no funciona, se puede cambiar. Es el momento de repensar la estructura del Banco Central Europeo, que se ha demostrado ineficaz en esta crisis de deuda y que ha actuado como un lobby de la banca privada. Los intereses particulares de la banca no son los intereses generales de los ciudadanos europeos. Hace falta una hacienda pública europea, una fiscalidad compartida, una deuda mancomunada y unas instituciones en las que los ciudadanos se vean reflejados y representados.
Era Pablo Iglesias, líder de Podemos. La popularidad del partido antiausteridad continúa creciendo en España, poniendo en serios aprietos al conservador Partido Popular en el gobierno, que busca ser reelegido a finales del año.
El 25 de febrero, la Radio del Sur de Venezuela cumple 5 años de existencia. Durante el acto de inauguración, el comandante presidente Hugo Chávez Frías oficializó el día invitando a varios jefes de Estado y algunos periodistas.
En Los Ángeles, California, vamos a saludar a toda la audiencia de Radio del Sur allá en Alta California. Un saludo a toda la audiencia en español. Y en inglés les digo, how are you, misters, allá en Los Ángeles.
En la lista de invitados se incluyó a la representación del informativo Pacífica. Escuchamos algunos fragmentos del intercambio.
Queremos primero que nada enviar un saludo a toda la audiencia de Radio del Sur, a nuestros hermanos y hermanas conciudadanas del mundo. Tenemos que recordar de que unificando criterios y uniendo esfuerzos podemos comunicarnos todos los pueblos de la tierra entre sí. Sabemos de que los poderosos tratan de controlar, de monopolizar los medios de comunicación para crear consenso, para crear una opinión pública favorable a sus agresiones y a su opresión, y nuestro deber como respuesta, como autodefensa legítima, es hacer lo contrario, defender nuestros derechos por los medios de comunicación a través de la Radio del Sur.
Oye, Fernando, qué buena arenga, ¿verdad? Qué buena arenga para nuestro pueblo. No, te están oyendo aquí en Venezuela, en Bolivia, Nicaragua, en Cuba y más abajo en Argentina, en África. Bueno, un mensaje que llega al mundo entero. Y nosotros aprovechamos para, bueno, subrayar ese mensaje dirigido al pueblo de los Estados Unidos, al pueblo de California, al pueblo de Los Ángeles.
Después de escuchar que la Red Pacífica está vinculada a la Federación Nacional de Radios Comunitarias y el potencial de la Radio del Sur para llegar al pueblo estadounidense, el primer mandatario venezolano habló de la construcción de puentes de amistad.
Fíjense, eso es un potencial, es una oportunidad, conjunto de oportunidades que están allí, hay que llegarle a esos pueblos, llegarles con reflexiones, con nuestra música, nuestras ideas, nuestros sentimientos de hermandad. Y así se lo digo, Fernando, permíteme, a todos los hombres, mujeres, jóvenes, niñas, niños.
El jefe de Estado venezolano envió un saludo fraternal al pueblo estadounidense, subrayando la importancia que tiene el acercamiento entre naciones para construir la paz.
Gracias, hermano. Bueno, hasta ahora aprovecho para hacerle llegar a todo el pueblo californiano el saludo respetuoso del pueblo venezolano, el gobierno venezolano y por extensión de todos nosotros. Aquí estamos, embajadores, jóvenes, estudiantes, trabajadores, obreros, amas de casa, periodistas, cultores, músicos. Un saludo del alma, del alma, porque es del alma de los pueblos, del alma de un pueblo que se le llega al alma de otro pueblo, de otros pueblos. Y solo eso podrá asegurarnos la paz en el futuro. Que podamos convivir en este mundo en paz.
Durante el intercambio salió a colación la situación desesperante que viven millones de estadounidenses bajo la coyuntura financiera actual. Chávez habló de la crisis del sistema económico dominante y cómo se intenta ocultar su efecto devastador en las familias obreras.
Ya tú decías hace poco, nos decía, bueno, resumen por encimita, como dijiste, la situación de una quiebra en California. Y bueno, es el capitalismo, pues. El capitalismo llegó a sus límites. No hay más allá, ya no puede. Es lo que dice Mesaros, Iván Mesaros, lo que ha también desarrollado aquí en Venezuela Jorge Giordani, en sus estudios, en sus escritos. El capitalismo durante mucho tiempo tuvo capacidad para, bueno, para solventar, para sobrevivir, para superar sus grandes contradicciones internas. Pareciera que las condiciones o las capacidades del sistema para regularse a sí mismo ya llegaron a su límite. Entonces tú ves cómo en Estados Unidos hay regiones que están quebradas, caotizadas. Pero claro, eso no lo sabe casi nadie en el mundo, eso lo tapan. Estamos oyendo a Fernando Velázquez hacernos ese resumen de cómo está la vida en California.
Minutos más tarde, el comandante esbozó algunas ideas para unificar a los pueblos del continente a través de la radio. Habló de programas interactivos que incluyan la participación de las madres, los jóvenes, los empresarios y otras figuras representativas.
Mira, lo que tú estás planteando, Velázquez, es algo extraordinariamente grande, pues, valioso. Entonces, sobre la marcha, uno viene haciendo reflexiones. Así como yo estoy aquí sentado conversando, como conversamos con la presidenta argentina, con Daniel Ortega, hablamos con África, en fin, así como estamos nosotros, tú y yo, Fernando, conversando. Imagínate que inventemos unos programas en los cuales, bueno, puede ser hasta todos los días, desde Caracas a Los Ángeles, Buenos Aires, Los Ángeles, Managua, La Paz, etcétera, donde la gente se comunique, las madres de aquí con las madres de allá, los padres, los hijos, los estudiantes, los trabajadores, hablen por aquí, programas interactivos, y no solo para conocerse, hay que empezar conociéndose, intercambiando ideas, opiniones, sino además luego vienen las ideas para llevar adelante proyectos.
El primer mandatario apuntó a las y los obreros de la industria textil, los mismos que pudieran mejorar sus vidas incorporándose a los programas de las Naciones de la Alianza Bolivariana para los Pueblos de Nuestra América, el ALBA.
Tú dices que el sector textil está por el suelo. Bueno, tú sabes que aquí en Venezuela estamos levantando la producción textil progresivamente. En Bolivia hay un buen sector textil. Yo quiero decirte, Fernando, que en Cuba, por ejemplo, bueno, hace años que ya la revolución logró derrotar el desempleo y no hay gente abandonada en las calles de Cuba, ni niños en la calle, ni gente que es sacada de su vivienda. En Venezuela tampoco, aun cuando tenemos apenas una década del proyecto revolucionario, socialista. Imagínate que nosotros podamos hacer contacto con parte de esos sectores de la producción textil de California y que hagamos, Nicolás, el ALBA en California, Alianza Bolivariana, el ALBA y Tratado de Comercio de los Pueblos, porque el ALBA tiene por dentro el Tratado de Comercio de los Pueblos.
Después habló de utilizar la radio para promover programas de cooperación, jornadas educativas, foros de discusión y profundización del conocimiento.
Tú, Fernando, puedes comenzar a llamar por ahí, por la emisora pacífica, a los pequeños productores que quedaron quebrados, por ejemplo, textiles, que a lo mejor tienen capacidad instalada, máquinas, experiencia, conocimiento. Y a lo mejor lo ponemos a hablar con los de aquí de Venezuela, los de Bolivia, a través de la emisora, y a crear proyectos que se puedan complementar, a buscar recursos y a crear empresas gran nacionales, como lo estamos haciendo nosotros en los países de la Alianza Bolivariana, Nicaragua, Venezuela, Cuba, Bolivia, Ecuador, Dominica. Organizar, por ejemplo, bueno, jornadas educativas a través de la radio, jornadas educativas de los jóvenes, discusiones sobre el tema económico.
El presidente Chávez apuntó a la necesidad de reducir la brecha que divide a los pueblos hermanos del continente, incluyendo el de los Estados Unidos de Norteamérica.
Cruzar informaciones, crear conciencia de que el pueblo de los Estados Unidos es hermano del pueblo de Venezuela, es hermano del pueblo de América Latina y del Caribe, y que tenemos que salvar este mundo juntos, de la mano.
En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Thank you. One time. Yo, 1212, it's Rock Ira Science, Dilated Peoples, Expansion Team Sound System, Universal Zulu Nation, Rock Steady Crew Worldwide, and I'm chilling with my people building bridges, Brown Beret Radio, don't get it twisted and don't touch that dial, man, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3, and we calling it Free Radio because we going for freedom, not just because you ain't got to pay for it, and if you can't check us out here, check us out on freakradio.org, man, that's what it is, don't touch that dial unless you're trying to turn it up.
Radio Santa Cruz. My name is John Malkin, and the name of this show is The Great Leap Forward. You can hear this program every Wednesday night from 7 to 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Coming up soon here in Santa Cruz is a special community engagement with Paul Hocken and Reverend Deborah L. Johnson. The focus of an evening and a day engagement will be building synergies between the environmental and social justice movements, a key to the next phase of global transformation. The community engagement is titled For the Planet and Her People. This is happening Friday, October 11th and Saturday, October 12th, 2013.
And as you can imagine, that is an old show. So let's get on with a live show, a new show, the current show of Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, coming at you today, February 26, 2015. See? We're even more up to date than I figured. So stay tuned.
Significance, there's nothing else that will do it.
And that was, of course, Pins and Needles, Sing Me a Song, and welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. If you got past the creaky opening, then perhaps you'll be able to dive into some of the more meaty parts of the show. When I was ending the show on Sunday, the show has a longer version, 9:30 to 1 or even 1:30 on Sunday, I was doing an interview, or playing you an interview, with attorney, artist, and activist Ocean Newman of Berkeley, who was talking about his concerns around the right to rest law. He's a great supporter of it, of course, the law in Sacramento that activists are trying to push that would ban cities from criminalizing the right to rest for poor people outside, which is, of course, a big problem in Santa Cruz with the sleeping ban, the sitting ban, the performing ban, where the ban means bans in 98% of the public spaces along such thoroughfares as Pacific Avenue. It is true you can perform and you can sit within about 1 or 2% of the sidewalk. The rest of it is reserved for commercial activity, passing on through, and it's a form of seizure of the public commons, of course. And it's also designed to drive poor people out of the area and out of sight, as well as collections of people that make police and business people nervous, whether they're young or minority or protesters engaged in some kinds of activities. These kinds of situations are put under tighter police control by making the very act of sitting down on almost any area on the sidewalk or setting up a table on almost any area of the sidewalk a criminal act. And it's also interesting that elsewhere in town, on any business district, it's actually illegal because there are no so-called performance pens or blue, red, yellow, chalked out spaces, painted out areas where, like on Pacific Avenue, you're allowed to set up a table, perform, vend, and so forth. Is that unconstitutional? Of course it is. Is that something that police are enforcing? Well, one of these days, we have set up tables in front of the Rio Theater in the past, out on Soquel Avenue, and the police ignored us, even though we were set up in a, quote, illegal spot. Because all spots along the streets are illegal because you have to be, at that time you had to be 10 feet from a building. Now you have to be 14 feet from a building, which is impossible if there are any buildings around on the narrow sidewalks that are in relatively narrow. You can set up a table, people can still pass by. It's not that you're blocking, but you are technically disobeying the law. In Berkeley, Ocean Newman was talking about how laws can seem to be cities can argue, as they will, as if the right to rest law is actually picked up by an assembly person, as we all hope it will be, but that, as of a few days ago, hadn't happened. I'm not sure what the current situation is. But in Sacramento, different homeless groups, including Western Regional Advocacy Project, RAP, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco, a variety of organizations throughout the state are pressing for this obvious assertion of basic rights. The problem is it eliminates all laws through all the cities of California. That's not really a problem. It's a good thing, but it means that you've got all the cities against you. And also you have laws that the cities can argue have a legitimate purpose because they don't use the word homeless, and they're just simply regulations of time, place, and manner. And so, you know, there are some places people can sit down, not many, admittedly, but some, so it doesn't completely exclude the rights of the public. So it will be quite a battle. In any case, let's hear more of what this longtime attorney and, more important, activist and writer. He's recently published a new book. He's is an artist. He draws portraits. He's done big murals. He's also been assaulted by police, and he's been a member of the Berkeley Police Review Commission some time ago. He defends homeless people in court under the suitcase law clinic. Is that what it's called? Something to that effect in Berkeley. Let's tune in on the rest of his discussion, interview, and see what we learn, if anything.
We're trying to deal with this problem within our streets.
A massive public health and safety crisis has developed.
Well, and a crisis around our businesses. We're losing money. I mean, when we had the no on the, they wanted to pass this Measure S a couple of years ago to prohibit sitting on the sidewalk. We managed to defeat it in Berkeley, but their major argument is that on Telegraph Avenue, we're losing money because of people don't want to come here because of all those people there. Well, so what's going to happen in Sacramento when they get there and they say, these laws, I mean, you're destroying our businesses if you pass this law. We're not going to, and you know, you're just, it's way overreaching. That's partly my concern. I mean, so I think partly we have to deal with, we have to have more local organizing around these issues.
How's it looking in Berkeley for local organizing?
Well, there isn't a lot of local organizing in Berkeley. I mean, I moved from Berkeley to Albany, where I spent a year fighting Albany to try and protect the community of people living on the Albany bulb. And we brought a lawsuit and we failed. Albany has laws against, the laws that they used to evict the people on the bulb were laws against camping in parks, camping in the waterfront area at night, or just being in the waterfront area at night. So what do you do in that's the law they used in Albany and managed to destroy this community that there for 15 years. So you go to Sacramento and say, well, we want you to invalidate the laws that say that you, the curfew laws in our park. The cities are going to say, are you crazy? You know, we can't close our parks at night where it's dangerous and all these problems, and we're going to not be able to patrol them, and we'll have rapes and murders. That's what you're going to get.
Although, those claims are not necessarily justified.
Well, whether they are or not, you know that that's going to be what you're going to hear in Sacramento. That's why I don't think. That's why I'm concerned about the focusing of the energy there. I mean, I know it's really difficult to organize people who are homeless, partly because most of the organizers of people who are homeless are not homeless. And there's a reason for that. It's because if you're homeless, you really have to spend a ton of your time just surviving. And you don't really have it's very difficult to put together your life in such a way that you have this surplus energy that you can put into organizing. So, you know, there just aren't that most of the organizing is done of people who are homeless is done by people who aren't homeless.
What are the chances of coalitions in Berkeley, a la the Occupy movement, a la the general concern about bankster fraud, the rising rents and profiteering? Is any of that, in your mind, tend to prompt prospects of some broader coalition?
Well, I think it would be good. I think homeless organizing, it would benefit by being part of this larger agenda, mm-hmm. Around police, around gentrification, and so on. You know, and that's the other problem that has to be dealt with if you're dealing with the criminalization of homeless people who are homeless is the impact of gentrification on our inner cities and the fact that all through Berkeley and Oakland around here and all in San Francisco, when you get people coming in, dot-comers or whatever, spending $1 million for a condo or spending, you know, $10,000 a month rent, they don't want to look out their window and see folks with shopping carts or folks sleeping in their doorways. And they're the ones who have the ear of the elected officials. So dealing with gentrification has to be part of the strategy around our public streets and our public commons and keeping them open.
Any suggestions?
Well, you know, gentrification is really difficult. I mean, what you're going to need are what we need is a commitment to public housing. We need kind of funding for public housing, for low-income public housing, which we don't have. That, you know, some of it can come from cities. Really, the problem is our national priorities around that. insofar as there can be, and the laws have become more difficult in terms of mandating developers putting aside some portion of their development for low-income housing, mixed use, or putting aside some funds. That's been made it much more difficult, but insofar as that's still possible, it's important to do that. I mean, the fights against foreclosures that are happening, organizing against foreclosures to keep poor people in their houses. It has to be a multi-pronged strategy.
How about rent control in Berkeley?
Rent control is certainly important. We have rent control, but we have vacancy decontrol from the city so that it hasn't stopped the pace of gentrification. I mean, the problem is that, I mean, in this neighborhood where we are now, every time a house changes hands, it's been owned by an African-American family or individual, it goes to, the price shoots up, partly because it was in another reinflated bubble.
And in Santa Cruz, there isn't even the semblance of rent control at all. Rent control was available for two trailer parks or two mobile home parks, De Anza and Clearview Court, until it was destroyed by essentially a double cross by the Santa Cruz City Council because they became tired of defending lawsuits that would they successfully won, but they had to keep paying out money and they didn't like to do it in spite of their rent control in perpetuity promises to the low-income people who lived in at least Clearview Court and to some extent in De Anza. Now there's no rent control except that those who currently live there, until their place changes hands, they will have rent control, but it means they have to live there till they die or else sell at a great loss because nobody wants to buy a space at any kind of, the spaces are worth very little if the rents will suddenly shoot up tremendously once they leave. And that, of course, is something that is mandated statewide by the Ellis Act, the vacancy decontrol law that Osha Newman has spoken about. But there is still rent control in Berkeley as long as a person stays in that place. Once they leave, the landlord can set the rent at anything she or he wants to do, which, of course, sets the stage for the immense profiteering that we see and have seen for the last, endlessly in the last past, but particularly in the last 20 years since the Ellis Act passed in the 90s. Let's hear some more from Osha. And again, the call-in number here, if you have some thoughts you want to contribute to this, is 427-3772.
The price shoots up, and some young white family comes in that's about to have a child or just had a child and, starts their new life in this home that used to be belonged to this black family that can no longer afford here or whatever. I mean, that's happening all over here. And that's going to make it more difficult for us who are struggling, not just for people who are homeless, for those who are on the poorest people here, and for the kind of diversity that we used to have in our cities, cultural diversity, class diversity, and so on, which has to include racial diversity, has to include poor people. If there was housing for poor, we always say the solution for homelessness is housing. So, unless we can get that kind of commitment to that low-income housing and to the fighting of this juggernaut of gentrification, which is very difficult. I'm not saying it's easy to fight.
Are there a lot of vacant buildings or people are squatting these days?
There are not a lot of vacant buildings around here. So there are some squats, but not a lot. I mean, partly because real estate is so valuable that there's always somebody around to buy up a vacant building.
It's true. San Francisco as well.
Oh, San Francisco, even more so here. I mean, we are now, really well-off people who are now priced out of San Francisco are now moving into Oakland and Berkeley. So certainly we're going the way of San Francisco. San Francisco is probably the more extreme version of it. And you see, I mean, what you see is, for example, what's happening in the Mission, where, you know, this was a Latin neighborhood, you know, where you heard Spanish all up and down the streets, and poor people were there, and so on. And now you go on Van Ness Avenue, and it's one wine bar or an expensive restaurant after another. And it's working its way down 24th Street towards Bryan and Harrison.
Will you be painting any guerrilla murals over there?
I don't think I'll be painting murals over there. The opportunity for murals is going to dry up also. I mean, it's like all of this is related. I mean, the kind of guerrilla or radical community art is not going to be happening either, because that also depends on this, you know, poor people being around, who have the kind of communities that are open to that, and these new communities, these new gentrified communities, aren't going to be open to that.
And where have these poor people gone?
Well, I mean, there's now a reversal of what used to. It used to be, I mean, this is now well known, there was white flight from the inner cities out into the suburbs. And the suburbs where all the white people were afraid of, you know, all the black people moving in and so on and so forth, moved out to the suburbs. Now all the white people want to be back in the middle of, in the central city. And the poor people of color, have to move further and further out, where there's less amenities, harder to get to work, more social isolation. That's what's happening. And for the people who are homeless, it's the same. I mean, where they can find places. I mean, the people who were kicked out from the from Albany, from the landfill in Albany, where did they go? They went to the next freeway exit south of Albany, just over the border to the Gilman Street off-ramp in Berkeley, and camped under the overpass there.
Is that where they are now?
No, they got kicked out of there by Berkeley, having been kicked out by Albany. We tried to fight to keep them there, and they said, oh, well, it's dangerous, and so on. And in the middle of it all, they just came and pushed everybody out. So now, you know, we're struggling to find places for just that. Let's just take that group that was living in Albany.
You're talking about how many people?
Well, they were, you know, by the time the eviction happened, there were like 30, 40, 50 people living out there. And now the Homeless Action Center has been very active in trying to get people inside. The East Bay Community Law Center, where I work, has been active. But there are people we've lost. There are people who are just out there. Some people have found their own little niches.
There was some deal where they paid people to stay away from all that.
Well, they paid a certain number of people $3,000 to go away, and which was not enough for anything. I mean, one guy went to North Face and bought a big expensive jacket and maybe some drugs, and that was it.
This is also what the city of Santa Cruz did to get people to move from the Dolphin Lee apartments that became the Nueva Vista apartments in the Beach Flats. Instead of offering them apartments in the new place in perpetuity, they destroyed the three different low-income apartment buildings that were there. This is under the so-called progressive majority of city council between 1998 and 2002, under the leadership of former Mayor Catherine Byers. And they gave, I think, each of the residents $5,000 to leave, but, of course, no real alternate housing in the area that they could continue to rent at the very low rates they were using for the Dolphin and Lee apartments. And there was a third apartment building, too, that was also destroyed by the city to put up its new show project there. Instead of building additional low-income housing and leaving the low-income housing where it was, perhaps to many come up to better standards, because that would always be good, they destroyed the housing and set up their fancy project and displaced a significant number of people. That's sort of the Santa Cruz version of what Osha Newman is talking about.
There's some people who are inside. They had an organization, I didn't think very highly of it, what they did, the Berkeley Food and Housing Project, that they contracted to help people get inside. They got some people inside, nowhere near enough. So that Albany is now, they've solved their homeless problem. They don't have any homeless people there anymore at night. It's like a town, it's like a...
Sundown town?
It's a sundown town for homeless people, yeah, is basically what it is, which I don't know if people remember now. Sundown towns used to be all over the United States, all over in every state, where there were literally signs on the edge of the town that said, if you're black, although it didn't say you're black, is in other words, they'd get out of town. Mm-hmm. By sundown. Well, Albany could have such a sign now. It is virtually the same. It is now really, they have the way their laws are written and enforced, there really isn't a place to be in Albany legally after dark. And they're not going to let people back onto the landfill. I mean, they're being very, very vigilant about that. They're scared of that. So I don't know what the answer, there's no single answer. I mean, there's some laws we hope to challenge in the courts. There's a law, 647, Penal Code Section 647E, which is a law that...
The lodging law.
The lodging law, which we've always felt should be declared unconstitutional on its face because it's so vague, nobody knows what it means. For a homeless person, what does it mean that you're to lodge? I mean, anywhere...
Lodging isn't defined in the code.
It's not defined at all. It just says to lodge. To lodge in any, building, vehicle, place without the permission of the owner or the person in charge. Nobody knows what it means. And if you're homeless, well, you got your backpack, you sit down with your stuff, or you eat your food on the sidewalk. Are you lodging there? How long do you have to be in a place before you're lodging? If you're sleeping, are you lodging? If you're not sleeping, are you not lodging? You know, if you're in a sleeping bag, are you lodging? If you don't have a sleeping bag, nobody knows that. So we are now in court challenging that ordinance, and that we have like 6, 7, 8 cases of people who've been cited for that. We don't know where that's going to go, but that's certainly one avenue.
Federal or local?
Right now, we're doing it by way of a challenge to the charge that people.
So they can avoid it by dropping the charge.
Well, yeah, but they're not. I don't think they're going to do it. I mean, we have a writ now. Basically, what happened is we go into court when people are issued these charges and say that the charging document is invalid because it's charging an unconstitutional law. Mm-hmm. And we'll see where that goes. It may not go anywhere. But
how long have you been challenging this?
Well, we've been doing
Ken Modesh or Moshesh. Or
yeah, what? It's been going on for a while. We've actually
15 years.
In the trial court, we have not been in the appellate court. We actually were succeeding in the trial court in getting these cases thrown out. Now we're not. So we've moved to the next level. Of the,
what's the reason for this change? In
we don't know. One of the judges just in the Oakland Superior Court, the judge who heard these motions, just flipped and decided, she just went south on us and never explained why. So we don't know what her thinking was.
So you're challenging her reasoning in a higher court.
We're challenging, her denial of our challenge.
And when is there likely to be some decision on this?
Well, I don't know. I just tried to find that out. They've had it since we filed it in October. We weren't able to get the transcript until December. I expect in another month or two.
What's the name? The lead case, the name of the lead case?
It's Hawthorne versus People versus Hawthorne. Mm-hmm. Hawthorne is a hate man.
Really? Yeah. He's still around, huh?
Oh, yeah. They are desperately trying. They have tried forever to get him out of People's Park, and he remains there to this day. He's 78 years old.
Ah, good for him. If People's Park is still pretty much, are they're trying to enforce it being closed at night, or are people sleeping there?
They try and enforce it to be closed at night, but they also are doing their best to get people kicked out during the day. And the people the lodging charges that we're challenging that Hawthorne Hate Man got were issued during the day. People were in a public park during the day, just sitting there in the park, and were charged with lodging because they go there, I guess, every day. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. I mean, you're in a park that's open to the public, a public park that's open to the public. You're sitting there. You're not committing any crime that they can find, that they can charge you with. So they say you're, quote, lodging, which means that you're just there.
Is Hayden continuing to be able to use the park?
So far.
He's been multiply charged with 647.
He has managed to fight every single one of them so far. I mean, he got probation on one of them. But basically, he's charged constantly. His man is still be there. But
is he offering to push the judge?
No, he managed to get the police, I think, on his to at least push or do a little of his.
Those who don't know, Hate Man has a way of directly expressing feeling through getting you to push physically, and it's
He's the most peaceful, benign person you could know. He doesn't drink. He doesn't do drugs.
It's not violent. It's just a form of expression.
I mean, they call himself Hate Man because he.
He says, I hate you.
His philosophy is that the reason why we're in so much trouble is because we suppress our anger and our hostility. And if we were just in the beginning, just sort of admit that we have this in us, then we could have civil conversations.
Even love,
you know. So, and he actually is the center of kind of a circle that holds kind of a space there, a community space, partly, largely through him. He has a lot of respect. From all the people who are out there trying to survive in that park, with constant pressure from the university to get them out of there.
I could go on, and so could you. We've been talking with Osha Newman, who's a longtime community activist in Berkeley. Have you got a website where people can go to check out? Of course, you've written two books, which actually one of the reasons I'm here is to get those books.
I've got now a Facebook page, largely for the books. I hate Facebook, and I hate that they know everything, but people told me that because I've just published this book called Doodling on the Titanic, The Making of Art in a World on the Brink, which is available, should be available at your bookstores, at least in Berkeley, but isn't available on Amazon. I've got a Facebook page. So
go to Osha, O-S-H-A-N-E-U-M-A-N-N.
Yeah, and I have a website I'm working on, all that stuff, I hate it, but... Anyway, yes. So, and you know,
it's going to be your first million through this landlord and author now.
The chances of me, you know, ever getting out of the, you know, the red in this book, you know, this book. If I break even on this book, I'll be very lucky. I self-published. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to help contribute to that, and we've been talking with
Osha Newman.
Thanks, Osha.
Thanks. Well,
should be on.
And at some point, I'm going to try to get both Osha's books in the public library, Up Against the Wall, Motherfucker, which is the name of a group in New York City in the 60s that he was a co-founder of, or perhaps a founder of, and his book, Doodling on the Titanic. I'll try to bring these books with me to the Huff meetings, in case people want to look at them there. We meet every Wednesday at 11 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe. That's at 703 Pacific, right next to the bike church, in case anybody who hears these broadcasts wants to get a little closer to the action, maybe volunteer. You don't even have to come to a Huff meeting to get involved. You just call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, which is also my phone number, and I will find you something to do you've got some skills with people, you like tabling, you like know how to deal with computers and websites. We all need these kinds of skills. You know, we're in pretty threadbare space situation. And you can also go to the Huff website, where you'll be able to hear these past shows, like this one you're listening to now. They're all archived, at least for the last 10 years now, amazingly enough. Not all of them are, most of them are not very well described. You just have to go and kind of listen through them. Some of them are. And the name of the show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, and that's what you look for on the Huff website at huffsantacruz.org, if you want to check that out. You can also help out freakradio.org. Our radio station is hitting its 20th anniversary. We're illegal, but we are appreciated by at least some folks in the community, and I think we perform a public service that isn't performed elsewhere. It's a kind of free speech activity. We're fucking proud of that, to use a colloquial expression. We don't censor our speech based upon the lowest common denominator or the most repressive mentality that might be listening or the FCC's rules that we don't pay much attention to. But we do pay attention to, I think, underrepresented voices that don't get out there much. I'm particularly concerned about homeless civil rights, poor people, and their opportunity to speak, and for those who also consider themselves advocates for those folks. So if you want to help out, go to the Free Radio website, which is freakradio.org. That's one word, freakradio, small letters, .org. And see what you can do. You can kick down money. You can provide equipment. You can actually join the collective and have your own show. You can read schedules and such about what shows happen when. And as I've been saying repeatedly and not getting too much response from, actually not getting any response from, we do have a transmitter problem. The transmitter site is still tenuously perched in Santa Cruz waiting for the final foreclosure, which is coming soon. And when that happens, we will be off the air. We will still, we hope, be streaming, but when we did that before, it tended to lose listeners and lose broadcasters. So that's kind of a, sorry for all you folks who have to keep hearing this, but it's still true. And we need a place to go to set up a transmitter. It's not hard. It has to be, you know, tree level, second story level. And we've done it before, but this time where I seem to be having a lot of trouble doing it. It may be, as I said on numerous occasions in the past, that free radio has had its day, that radio has had its day, but hopefully not. In any case, some people do occasionally call in, as you can hear from the ding-a-ling in the background. Let's see who's a ding-a-linging. You are on free radio. Good evening.
I am. Well, let's keep this free radio going. Hey, you know, Uncle Robert, this is David Silva.
Hey, David.
I plan to be buying a home soon, and as soon as I get a home, you know I'm going to make sure that you guys can have an antenna in my backyard, okay?
All right. Well, let's give the FCC your address. Why don't you...
Yeah, do give them my...
That's very
I think I've handled,
generous of you.
I've handled a lot of bureaucracies in my day. I'm kind of a retired professional bureaucrat, both from the military and from social services. I think I can handle just about any bureaucrat they send my way.
Well, I know you're certainly a fan of free radio.
But all I can say is keep the faith until I can get that done, and I guarantee you, well, you'll have space in my backyard.
Thank you, David.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And, David, thank you for your loyal listening and passionate speaking. And, you know, that energy is valuable in and of itself. You don't have to throw large amounts of money at us or offer us your property. But if anybody there does know of a place where we can put up a transmitter, that's something we want to do. And let us know. Call me at 423-4833. That's the Huff website. Sorry, the Huff phone number. And the Huff website is, as I mentioned, huffsantacruz.org. That's really more for my show and the kind of issues I raise. Freakradio.org is a free radio website, and that's for stuff related to free radio. I'm going to play a little music now from a show that I really just discovered recently. It's a musical called Let My People Come from the 70s. And yes, it's all about sex, or at least some interpretations of it. It's a musical review which had nudity, X-rated language, nominated for a Grammy in 1974, and I'm reading from some of the linear notes. It's appeared all around the world. It's a fun show, takes the attitude that everyone loves sex, well, when they're honest enough to admit it. So let's hear a little of the opening number of that, and we'll see where we go from there.
Who is that?
Thank you.
hold off on that song until the next break. Yeah, and that's from Let My People Come. Phone number here is 427-3772. If you'd like to sing a little song of your own on the air, just call on in. Or more important, perhaps, and more relevant, if you have any reports from the street. Today, a couple of Huff activists, Elise and Pat Colby, went out to check out the scene at the St. Francis Soup Kitchen and to see who is getting citations, who is getting stay-away orders. It's a place where people show up around noon on Morris Street to get lunch. And Pat said she might be calling in with a report. Not sure if she's going to. She's got a lot of other stuff she does. But apparently the authorities at Morris Street wanted her to go away, even though she wasn't on their property, which... That's kind of standard for what I found at the St. Francis Soup Kitchen. Well, it varies, actually, over the years. We've done protests there when they started discriminating against deadheads 20 years ago and other homeless activists. They, you know, I haven't heard of a lot of discrimination recently there against activists. But this is an example, I think, of the right-wing mentality that is kind of etching its way acidically into the landscape, and it's unfortunate. But let's turn to some voices on the street. I want to also point out that in the studio with me is that redoubtable Doc Mike, who is he has his own show on
Monday and Tuesday.
And the name of the show, of course, which I never remember, is...
there's now two shows with two different names.
And what are those names?
One is called Awakening the South, and the other is called Health and Wellness.
Okie doke. And the times of those shows?
Monday, 6 to 8, is Awakening the South, the Big South. And Tuesday, it's 7 to 8. That's wellness, health and wellness.
Okie doke. And so, check them out if you'd like. And Mike is in the studio. He will be giving us some updates on the homeless lack of services centers late in the upcoming gate christening. I guess that's the security gate, which doesn't have barbed wire, but makes sure that the wrong kind of people don't get in or go out from the homeless lack of services center, so as to avoid terrifying the surrounding businesses and community. That's apparently going to be happening tomorrow. There's going to be some sort of check-in by the city council to make sure that the gate is working and locked at the right time. Mike tells me that he won't be getting there. It's actually a small part of the Homeless Lack of Services Center budget. We're going to be actually talking about the budget on Sunday, among other topics, with maybe next Thursday, with former Homeless Lack of Services Center Director Doug Loisel, who actually was going to call in last Sunday, didn't. He was swamped with an audit, he tells me, in a phone call we had about an hour ago. But he is going to be doing that in the future. And so that's hopefully going to be happening next Thursday. But the actual budget of the Homeless Lack of Services Center is many times the amount that the city council was threatening to withhold if the city council didn't adopt a new police state concentration camp style security gate fence ID program, which I do not understand they had, the homeless people had any input into whether they wanted such a thing there. Now, Mike, you've had some good things to say about the Homeless Lack of Services Center's, I don't know what it's called, recuperation center, whatever it is, because you yourself, you know, had essentially a heart attack and, you know, you were taken to Dominican and, you know, you were not in the best shape. You were living in your vehicle and you've been able to use their services for the last month. And you've been pleased with that, right?
Yeah, I've been pleased in general. It's a nice place. It's clean. It's well run. The people there are friendly. And so I think it's a good service in general. So what more can I say, basically? I heard that I heard about the gate being finished, having to be finished today, so it's ready for tomorrow's inspection. Otherwise, they don't get their, $50,000 or $60,000, whatever they're supposed to get from the city.
Of the million or more dollar budget that they actually have.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I know, it's nice to be able to get the money you need, but again, when the strings attached involve dehumanizing the people involved under the pretext of helping or protecting the community or protecting them as though it's some great menace that is stalking the area is just...
Well, I was at a meeting today. I was at a meeting when that information came up, and I jokingly said, well, are they going to have a sentry walking over and back there with a gun on his shoulder?
They do have first alarm security guards.
Yeah.
And I don't know, are those first alarm security guards armed with any kinds of weapons? I'm not sure.
I see their car outside the gate there almost every day.
I mean, I know, I've seen them walking up and down. They're in their little uniforms with their badges. Sometimes they're big uniforms with their badges. And I'm... and never happy when I see them. We actually did invite Big John, who patrols the area near the library with the city council, who I've often had some rather sharp words for because of both what I've seen in terms of what he's done and also stories I've heard about his behavior towards running homeless people off without any good reason. But on the Tuesday... Well, we did a kind of a coffee, a Colby Cafe or a Huff Cafe outside the library, and it was quite successful on Tuesday. That was enjoyable, and we actually got a number of people to sign claims against the city for sleep deprivation when they were awakened from sleeping. They awoke and they were awakened. In any case, they got rousted, and they were ticketed, too, adding insult to injury or injury to insult. By getting tickets that now are like at $156 or some such thing, if you want to pay them off without going to court, and most people don't pay them off, they throw them away, which destroys their credit eventually and does other bad things to them. It sets them up for more serious charges after the city attorney chooses to go after them, or the district attorney has been offering to help out. How helpful of District Attorney Jeff Rozelle to go after homeless people who get three or more unattended infractions they don't take to court because they're too busy surviving or they're too angry at the way that police are treating them in terms of abuses for behavior that is not different than that of any other human being, except that they have no place to do it, like sleep or piss or shit or smoke, you name it. So in any case, yeah, we had a successful time outside the library. We did it from 10 to 12, talked to a number of people, mostly sympathetic people, and I'm going to be playing some of those interviews. But let's roll into these interviews. I'm going to kind of try to catch up here. And this is from the Food Not Bombs meal, which happens every Saturday and Sunday, 4 to 6, at the main post office on the 21st.
Well, I'm down here at Food Not Bombs. It's about 10 after 5 on the 21st of February. I'm talking with...
Josh Adams.
Josh, who's this ne'er-do-well with you?
Bryce.
Redding. And you guys apparently got citations and stay-away orders?
Yeah, citations and stay-away for 24 hours for open beverages on Cowles Beach.
Were you stinking drunk?
No, I'd had two 12-ounce IPAs, and I was honest about it, and pretty sober.
And how many policemen stopped you in your tracks?
There was two.
And did they have any colloquy with you of any kind?
Any what?
Did they chat with you?
Oh, yeah. They wanted to tell us about our...
non-drinking rights?
Oh, sure, yeah. And to tell us that we were leaving trash and someone had left it and they were getting on us about it. And
had you left trash?
No, it was somebody else, and we picked it up anyhow.
How much trash was it?
It was a little plastic can holder.
Possibly a cigarette butt as well?
Oh, sure. There was probably a couple of those around.
So you admit, you acknowledge you're saying...
I always clean up my cigarette butts.
I see, yeah.
I like to try to keep places cleaner than they are when I got there, when I leave. Because then people usually don't mind when I come back.
So your citation was for open container as well?
Open container, yeah.
And how many of you got citations?
I think me and him and two other people possibly, maybe one other person. Maybe about 4 to 5 people.
Are you guys going to be around town for a while, or are you heading out?
I will probably be heading out soon.
And you, all right?
See what happens.
Okay. Fair enough. Hey. Hey, Jim. So, yeah, well, we, of course, are all set to challenge people in the people's sleeping ban and drinking ordinance and stay-away stuff. But if you're not going to be here, we'll let it go. So there.
Okay. But I might still be here, though.
If you stay around and get another citation, please get in touch. Here's a card. I thought I already gave you my card, maybe, but...
No, I don't think so.
I'll give you another one, even if I did.
And indeed, this shows that the stay-away provision of the new law is now being used. Actually, it sounds like they're right now just using the kind of holdover provision from the old law, which allows a police officer or ranger at her own discretion, if they issue any kind of ticket of any kind on any property that is within the park's jurisdiction, which is a large amount of property, goes far beyond what the formal park locations are, then they can, at their own discretion, give you a stay-away order. If it's the first stay-away order you've ever gotten, then it's for 24 hours. If it's the second, it's for a week. If it's the third, it's for a month. If it's the fourth, it's for 6 months. And this goes back beyond a year. And so this guy, these folks, apparently only got a day's stay-away orders. Maybe they're under special instructions not to give them out, or maybe these folks are new and haven't had any kind of stay-away orders at all. But I would like to hear from anybody who's gotten or knows of people who've gotten stay-away orders. If you've gotten three or more stay-away orders in the last year, even if they've only been for a day each, it's important that you let us know if you want to fight them. Because the next order you get... it's supposed to be for 6 months. I know that sounds completely weird, but that is the actual rigid language of the ordinance that was passed by City Council in January that severely impacts homeless people in the parks and large other swaths of town where parks rangers are authorized to give out citations. It can actually involve any area in town, provided the city manager decides to expand the jurisdiction, and he doesn't need to go to anybody for permission. He can do so by snapping his fingers and signing a piece of paper. That's Martine Bernal, who's the real power in the city, along with Parks and Rec's Zarina Dennett Shoemaker. So, give us a call at 423-HUFF if you've gotten a stay-away order, if you've gotten a sleeping ticket, particularly if you want to challenge these, and Huff is trying to do outreach. As I said, today, Pat Colby and Elise went down to the St. Francis Soup Kitchen at noon. Day before yesterday, on Tuesday, there was myself and Pat were at the library. We're planning to probably do this again soon to provide both a little coffee to sit and chat with, and also we'll bring the forms. I now have six new forms, specific claims against the city to turn in and demand that they provide $2,500 per incident of sleeping ban deprivation. They, of course, are likely to do no such thing. And, in fact, what they've done with the previous claims, we've put through four of them, is they have frozen them. So we don't know where they are. They have actually only 45 days to respond to them. If they don't, then we can go to small claims court anyway. But right now they're in limbo, so we'll see how that goes. Let's hear some more. And again, your phone call is 427-3772 if you're interested. And we will do what we can to pass on the news that we hear from those on the streets.
Here we are again, Food Up Bombs, about 5:15, talking with
Tony Lyon.
And Tony, you say you too either got something to complain about or something involving a citation? Or
I was a witness for this particular event that happened. Yes. So I was enjoying my beautiful day. It was beautiful people, beautiful music out. Everybody's enjoying life. It was a good atmosphere to the moment, and everything was going very smoothly. And then my friend got cited with a personal complaint. It wasn't from an officer. The officer served him papers and said, "You have a complaint from another citizen who is offended by the fact that you have been here for more than an hour."
Where was he?
He was selling his gemstones, and he had like a little booth set up vending on Pacific Avenue in front of Forever 21.
And does he mind giving out his first name?
I don't know.
Okay, ask him, because so he got a citation.
He got a personal complaint. Someone, a normal citizen, filed a complaint and served him papers to take him to court because they were offended by his presence.
I see. And what exactly was the offense of his presence?
Well, they were offended that he might have been there longer than an hour selling his gemstones.
I see. What, they wanted to use the space, or they preferred to see the wide open spaces?
We have no idea who that person was or where they went. They just filed a complaint, and we don't know who they are.
Well, it's interesting, because if it's an individual filing a citizen's complaint and the officer is not a personal witness, they have to have their name on the citation. So it's kind of interesting. When did this happen?
This happened about yesterday. I'm not sure, probably around noon. The officer did say that he was not a personal witness, but he had to serve the papers.
He doesn't have to serve the papers, but he can choose to serve the papers. So, interesting. Well, ask this jeweler fellow if he wants to come to a Huff meeting or, you know, get more publicity around this on free radio. We already have, you know, you're talking about it.
Yes.
That's both the radio station and the other side of the organization.
For sure.
And anything else?
Other than that, life's good. I just, you know, it's hard when you're, like, enjoying the atmosphere. Everything's beautiful. You got all this art, and then all these people with guns surround you and tell you you can't do what you're doing, and, like, you weren't even harming anybody. It's kind of scary.
And we've been talking with?
Tony Lyon.
Thanks, Tony.
Yeah.
And I actually think I spoke with this jewelry vendor, at least it was a jewelry vendor in front of Forever 21, though that they do shift around a bit. And he talked about how the police officer, and you'll hear him later, I think, at an interview coming up shortly, assuming we play it tonight, talking about how the police officer, even though he did not personally witness this guy being there for more than an hour, and he did not follow the law, which doesn't state you have to be gone after an hour. It states after an hour, if a police officer informs you that you've been there for an hour and requests you to move, and then you decline to move, then you get a rather hefty citation, $300 or $400 citation. It may actually have been Micah Posner, and with the support of Don Lane and Rochelle Naroyan and Cynthia Chase on the City Council, at Micah's initiative, after I brought the issue to his attention, got the bail lowered for the performance pen citations. That's what this is, those little colored areas on Pacific Avenue. If you are there for more than an hour and once after the hour you decline to leave, then you get a citation. That is not how the police are enforcing it. They are abusing the law. They are misreading the law. And unfortunately, the notion that you're going to be able to get justice in the courts without a video of what goes on or five businessmen witnessing it and testifying on your behalf may well be a stretch. So we'll see how that goes. I've suggested that folks come to the Huff meeting who are facing these citations, but so far none of them have shown up. And indeed, you know, people who are struggling to make enough money to pay the rent or pay for the gas in their vehicle or whatever they need to do, pay the fine they got for sleeping three nights before, don't have often the energy or time to come to one of our tumultuous Huff meetings where we seem to be spending a lot of time fighting with each other instead of fighting the authorities. But, you know, we still struggle on. But I do encourage people who have faced this, who are facing this issue of these of tickets, whether they're sleeping band tickets, sitting on the sidewalk tickets, being in a place for more than an hour tickets, which you thought this was your public space. Forget it. It is your public space, but you have to reclaim it in order to get it. So, but give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or come to the Huff meeting, or check in with the Food Not Bombs activists on Saturday or Sunday. That's coming up this weekend from 4 to 6 in front of the post office. You can also fill out claim forms there. Hopefully Huff volunteers will be there to help you with that, and we'll take them to City Council, and then we will attempt to take them to small claims court. And I'll be talking more about that as we move along. Let's uh, Let's have another musical break here. I've been kind of enjoyed the last one, so maybe we can hear another number from Let My People Come. And your phone calls, 427-3772, are welcome, so call in if you'd like.
I want a man who loves to fuck and can keep it up for days, whose flavor and snorting can make me come in a thousand different ways. Man who knows how to love and loves all the sex can be. And when he's driving me out of my mind, I wanna know he's fucking me. Give it to me, 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 hard and strong. Give it to me, 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 all night long. There's too many candy ass, lily livid, soft-bellied boys, courageous men. Find me a man who's got some balls. I'll be happier then, happier then. I want a man who knows he's good and keeps on getting better. I don't want him to take me along. I want us to go together. I want a man I can hold on to, who'll make me scream with joy. I want a man who's all grown up, but still a little boy. I said, give it to me, 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 hot and strong. Give it to me, 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 all night long. There's too many candy apps, lily livid, soft-bellied boys, courageous men. Find me a man, got some ball. I'll be happier then, happier then. Let me tell you about the way I am. My man has gotta be my friend. I don't want somebody using me. That ain't the way it's gonna be. And if a man starts playing tough, well, sister, that's his loss. Jack, you better just rock on, 'cause those days are dead and gone. Give it to me, 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 hot and strong. Give it to me, 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 all night long. There's too many candy apps, really little song, belly boys, courageous men. Find me a man, just on ball, I'm tired of wearing them.
And that was another one from Let My People Come, Give It To Me. You are tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, where you'll hear songs that you don't hear elsewhere. So support Free Radio and support diverse programming. We get a diversity of tactics and a diversity of programming here at Free Radio. Let's continue now with some interviews from Food Not Bombs last February 21st as we explore the tightening situation for poor and homeless people on the streets of Santa Cruz.
Damn it.
So we're talking with
Laura Werry, W-E-R-R-Y.
And Laura, you say that last Monday or Sunday or thereabouts, you got a trespassing citation?
It was Monday, and Sunday I'd been to the church, so I don't have a note. So now I've got...
That church?
Yes, a little Episcopal church. We were waiting the week before for Mother Mary Bishop, so I was helping there, and I've been helping there, but Father Joel won't give me... I've gotten my foot bit by a raccoon across the way, and I've like been there for about a month or two, but we almost got a place in Boulder Creek.
This is a Calvary Episcopal.
So I keep putting myself on the list, and I drop myself, you know, and I've got to go home to see my mom because of breast, you know, awareness. But and me too, the boyfriend comes back, and so we get an argument. He goes one way, I go another, and they clean things out, and one friend got in an argument with another friend, so we're not really wanting a bunch of people, and of course, we help with the Sundays. Stuff and
Father Joel
thought I was hectic at first, so I went over to the dentist's office. I've gotten a couple tickets.
So let's slow down. So
and I've gotten in trouble with First Alarm.
So well, some of us have, but what can you do?
Yeah.
So
I got hurt by one.
So I want to hear about that too. But you got a ticket on Monday at the Red Church.
I called on Monday. Well, so last Monday I went over across the street and two other people were getting harassed.
Where was this? Across
at the Red Church. So I went across the street and waited for my
boyfriend. How many people were harassed?
Kind of
how
watching.
Many? Who was harassing them?
There was two or three. They had their lights shining on them in their eyes.
Cops or first alarm?
The boys. It was cops. There was two. There was two or three officers.
Now what time of day or night was it?
It was 6 or 5:30 a.m. Six something like that. 7, 6:30.
Did you hear any of the conversation, or did you just see it from a distance?
I went across the street. I got myself up and left. Got my boyfriend had been there 2 days. After about 6 months, and we got a hotel Wednesday, and he worked for somebody that we knew.
So when you went over there on Monday, how long did this whole encounter take?
So I went across the street. I didn't get a ticket there, but two other people might have. They got pulled their blankets. They didn't go to jail or anything. They might have ran them. I don't know. They probably knew them. They were just making sure they got up, and that sometimes they do that.
Yeah, sort of a wake-up call.
Yeah. And
how
so,
many people were sleeping there, did you notice?
We had about 10. And that night, he had come back, so I was up late. You know, but it was the bishops allowed me there, and I'm not... So I'm on the list now again as of last night, just a precautionary in case I get another ticket. But, you know, I wasn't on one. Like 2 weeks ago, I got a ticket.
Are we talking about the ISSP, or are you talking about the...
the Red Church?
Or 115 Coral Street. Are you talking about...
The Red Coral Street.
I got you.
The regular.
Well, Red Church is one place. Coral Street
is... The regular Tracy's unit. I've been in with her like at New Life years ago, and I was in programs there, so now I've stayed up and I've tested dirty
ones. Again, I'm trying to understand. So this was out at 115 Coral, or...?
115 Coral has three different places, and I was trying to get... You're vulnerable, so I was trying to get in Paige Smith because I got a raccoon bite.
And you were on a list.
I was trying to get referred from a hospital.
You were on a list out there at Coral Street.
I've been trying to get a bed because of...
And as you can hear, Laura's talking about a variety of issues at the same time, somewhat freely associating. But one gets the feeling she's talking about some real things that have happened to her. At least that's the feeling I got. She's talking about the Red Church. I didn't quite catch that. And I can, as I review it now, understand. She's also talking about another situation that happened out at Coral Street, which is the address, 115 Coral Street, is the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call the Homeless Services Center.
Emergency.
Right. Were you on a list at Coral Street for the...
I have been on the list, but I went to the hospital in November. So anyway, back to...
That's the list I was talking about. That's the list I was asking.
No, I've been trying to get a referral from a doctor.
Okay.
So now the trespassing, I went across the street. I went across the street from when those people were getting hounded to leave. I left last Monday morning. And so I went around the corner to sit down, to gather my wits and hi, my AA friend. I go to AA normally. I didn't make it back because the cops saw me going over there after they were done. It was light, about a half an hour. I went over there with my bag. I sat down. I was going to rest some more. I wanted to go back to sleep.
Were you on public or private property?
Then it's a lawyer's office across the street that I've almost been mauled for my purse from. One time I went over there when, you know, and I'd be...
So it was on a lawyer's...
I got bitten at a dead...
Lawyer's office property.
After getting a ticket one time, and I think I...
So they gave you a ticket.
So I got a couple of tickets, and someone just got out of jail. So what we could do is we could look at them. Mm-hmm. You know, the trespassing, I would like to know how much it's going to cost and what to do about it. Because I'm not going back. They can't remove me. But the thing is, does it cost money?
It can, and possibly you can get community service. Did you get a stay-away order?
Well, that's what it means. When you get a trespassing, that's what you have to do.
Right, but
you're not supposed to come back or you can be removed.
Right.
Like, CVS can do it right now.
Okay, but you didn't get a stay-away order.
Yeah.
You didn't get
you
got a stay-away order from a piece of private property.
I got a trespassing. That means the same thing.
Okay, but you didn't get a separate thing that said stay-away.
No, that's pretty much what it is. It's a trespassing.
I understand. All right, well, I'm going to think about this more. We've been talking with...
Laura Wary, and I have three tickets that I need to worry about on the homeless. And
what are the dates?
Last month and the month before, something like that. Now, they could go and drop them, but we need to check them to see when I was on the list. Sometimes I was on the list, and two, I might not.
You find out what's going on, and we'll continue. We'll pick this up.
I need to worry about it. Okay.
And again, we've been talking with...
Thank you, Laura Wary.
Thank you, Laura.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I think Laura actually, 2 days later at the Red Church, did sit down with activist Becky Johnson and fill out claim forms for those two instances of sleep deprivation. And that's good in terms of holding the city accountable. And I'll be talking more about that as we kind of step further along that road. Let's hear another bit of music from... let my people come, and perhaps, never can tell, maybe a phone call of one kind or another.
Mom and Pop, how do I tell you? I never thought I'd ever find the nerve. Dear Mom and Pop, don't wanna hurt you. Pain is something you don't deserve. How many times did I lie? How many nights did I cry? There's no other way, I'll just have to come right out and say. Don't pay much attention to them. I'm hoping that you will come to see. This is how God meant me to be. This is my way, and I'm proud to come right out and say, I'm gay. Why you had to hear it from
That's
me.
Why you had to hear it from
if
me.
I didn't think so much of
I didn't
you.
Think so much
I guess
you.
I could have just said it
I guess I could have just said it
You'd have heard it from somebody somewhere, and that wouldn't be very fair. Maybe one day it won't be such a hard thing to say.
I'm Gay from Let My People Come, again, the 1974 musical, when it wasn't as easy to say you were gay as it is 40 years later, 41 years later. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. Call-in number here is 427-3772. In the studio, meditating or sleeping, I'm not sure which, is
wide awake,
but looking owlishly blinky-eyed is Doc Mike, and he's here, too, if you want to call in. You got any thoughts, questions about what you're hearing? Let's hear some more interviews from the street and perhaps some more music as well.
I want to start right there.
I believe it. I'm warning
you. You can get down here at the Free Church. It's about 10 after 6.
I'm talking with a man on the sidewalk. Your name, sir, if you wish to say.
Daniel.
And Daniel, you say that there hasn't been a lot of hassle, but you were a little disturbed at how a police officer responded when he started questioning and you said, are you being detained?
Yeah, I asked him if he said he had somebody call about someone smoking marijuana, and he didn't have a description of somebody. I asked him what was the description when he came up to me. He says, hey, hold on, come here. And he couldn't tell me. But he said that I fit the description. And then I said, well, am I being detained? And he said, yes. No, he said no. And I said, well, then I'm out of here. And I started walking off, and he said, no, you got to sit down. And that's the way it went. And then he emptied my backpack.
Did you give him permission to search?
Yes.
Probation or parole?
No.
So you were essentially perhaps a bit...
First, because I'm a new person in town or someone they didn't recognize. Usually the people that they... No, there are people of ill repute. They're going to be arrested or in jail, and the people that they don't know, which are just travelers, they're going to be of ill repute because they're either run on the run or they have drugs. Not me.
Possibly have a backpack. That could be sinister.
That's
shit,
right,
man.
Possibly a backpack.
So what time of day or night was
this? This was daytime.
About what part of the city did it happen?
Pete's Coffee.
Were you actually in the coffee shop?
No, I was out front smoking.
Ah, so you were smoking on Pacific Avenue illegally?
That's right.
Did you get a ticket?
No, I did not.
Interesting. So, in a way, he had cause to arrest you because of your illegal smoking activity.
Well, he had probable cause, you know, to stop me, but he said that someone was smoking marijuana, and I was smoking a cigarette, and I told him no, I wasn't, and then he went from there. You never get your fair shake.
You were telling me.
It's ironic that in Berkeley, which apparently, according to activists I've talked to, has some of the harshest laws about smoking in public, what you can smoke in public is marijuana if you are doing so for medical purposes. In Santa Cruz, that is not the case. You are not allowed to smoke marijuana in public, although, in fact, the only law that forbids it is a state code which says you have to be 1,000 feet away from schools and parks, but that means that in practice, the entire downtown area is pretty much ruled out for a person who medicates with medical marijuana. And this had severe impact on people like Craig Canada, who is a prior radio broadcaster on this show and a very active campaigner for the rights of medical marijuana patients. He has a website called Palm Springs Bum, for those who want to check it out. It's very articulate, does a lot of research. He's something of a hypersensitive queen, speaking of gay folks, but nonetheless, he has a lot of useful information, I think, to pass on. And he was seriously victimized and harassed by the police when he was houseless. He's since gotten into lodging. Let's hear some more from this Red Church interview of last Monday.
You say you've been
a hate crime. It should have been a hate crime.
Well, it sounds like he was profiling you. Yeah, no question. How about sleeping and camping? You gotten any citations for that?
Oh, I sleep here at the church. That's the only safe place I know.
You do so on part of the program or just...
No, I have permission from the pastor.
And how many people would you say have permission?
Shoot, he's probably given out permission to 500. There's probably about 20 of them here right now.
And how is that going? Is it fairly peaceful?
Yeah, it's pretty peaceful. Some people have too many nightcaps, but, I mean, everybody seems to control themselves.
Is there access to a bathroom?
Yes.
It sounds better than I thought. How long have you been crashing here, if you wish to say?
Probably 2 years.
And how long have you been crashing at the Red Church?
It's not clear from this discussion whether he means the program where one night a week the Red Church provides for 20 people or any night of the week where a number of people sleep outside on the grounds of the Red Church, which also happens. And Joel Miller, the pastor, has been quite candid in saying that he has no problem with people sleeping there as long as they don't create other difficulties. Although he has tightened up considerably in other ways, in the sense that he's become more repressive about people sitting on the grass in the hour before the Monday meal from 5 to 6, when the meal is from 6 to 7. And there is a, I'm not sure how seriously it's enforced, but I've often been annoyed, if not enraged, at the idea that this huge green space downtown, which is nominally owned by Calvary Episcopal Church, probably the largest green area outside San Lorenzo Park in the downtown area, is banned from people who are sitting, who want to sit there during the day and are inoffensively doing so. And I have to admit, I have not heard of people being driven away, nor have I heard of people, however, being invited or being told they are allowed to be there as long as they're not, you know, engaging in some kind of destructive behavior at other times. So that's my comment on that. Let's hear some more from, I guess this is February 23rd. It's on Monday. Yeah, February 23rd.
2 years.
Wow.
I've been here on and off for 20, but for the last couple of years I've been staying here because I have my lady with me, and it's just she has heavy sedatives at night. She takes medication, and it's people will want to take it from her, or actually people want to kill her for it. You know, it's heavy duty drugs and stuff.
How's her health?
It's very good, very good. It's just psych meds.
and some people, they just they don't know. They're drug addicts or whatever. They want to take anything you got.
You generally have a place when you come to town to stay at the Red Church, or it's just been recently?
No, every time we come now. Every time for the past 2 years.
Well, good for Joel Miller.
Yeah, Pastor Joel's great.
And good for you, man.
He does tell once in a while, you know, to clean up and don't stink it up, and you know, because some people are ruder than others. It's difficult for everybody to have couth out here. Okay.
Appreciate your doing the interview, and also I understand it's not your favorite thing, but thank you, man.
You're welcome.
And we've been talking with
Daniel.
Thanks, Daniel.
Come in My Mouth from Let My People Come. You're tuned still, I hope, to Free Radio Santa Cruz. And let's hear some more from the Red Church on Monday from the streets.
So we're inside the Red Church.
two wild guitarists strumming away. Looks like a fair crowd. About 30, 35 people in line. Are those the Bishop's Candlesticks?
No, no. It's the regular one.
And Joel Miller.
Okay. Announcement! Announcement, everybody! Tomorrow at 10 o'clock at the library, there will be coffee and perhaps num-nums. For folks who show up at the library at 10 o'clock in the morning, we're trying to get a record of anybody who's gotten stay-away orders or sleeping tickets or other harassment stuff from the cops. 10 o'clock tomorrow morning in front of the main library. Also, tomorrow at 4:30, there's a city council meeting, if anybody cares. I don't know, I don't most of the time. There's a stuff about a bunch of people are gathering around that Bearcat thing, the military vehicle the cops have gotten sort of slipped past the council. And I think there's going to be food there, too, 4:30 tomorrow at City Hall, if you're interested. And then finally, I think it's already been announced, David talked about it, on Wednesday, day after tomorrow, there's the usual Huff meeting, if you want to come to the homeless civil rights group, Sub Rosa Cafe, next to the bike church, free coffee, and lots of chatter, and who knows what else. If you've gotten any tickets, has anybody got tickets in the last week? Raise your hand if you got tickets. Yeah. Okay. Come to this table if you want. Show me the tickets or tell me about them, and we will fill out claims against the city. Thank you.
Yes. Thanks, Robert.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Robert.
Oh, yeah. We have that record.
And we did actually get a few people, wasn't the first time at the Red Church we were able to get a few claims processed. People signed essentially a claim against the city and another statement, and we then give it to the city, they time stamp it, and then within 45 days they have to either reject it or accept it, and they're almost invariably, I'd be very surprised if they accepted it. We could offer, and it's been suggested by the attorney down in Southern California who proposed this, Paul Cook, that we offer to settle with the city. If they want to give us a lesser amount than $2,500, we can see if the people who are aggrieved, if they will agree to stop harassing people for sleeping at night, provide them with legal places to go, then, you know, we'll settle out of court. I mean, we're not unreasonable here. So that's going to be a proposal that will probably be coming up in the course of all this. If you've gotten any kind of a sleeping ticket, camping ticket, and even if you've gotten other kinds of tickets that involve simply being outside, if you've gotten a ticket for taking a dump when the bathrooms were closed, if you've gotten a ticket for sitting on the sidewalk when you were tired, if you've gotten a ticket for being in a park after dark, I even argue if you've gotten a smoking ticket in an area when there were no people around and no one was being harmed. It doesn't mean we're going to win these cases, but we want to hold the officers who are giving them and the individuals who are instructing the officers to give them accountable. Not to mention the idiots, I should say, the political sadists who pass these laws. It's probably not accurate even to call them sadists. I think they're oblivious to it. But we do have a call-in, and let's see who is calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Pat Colby.
Hey, Pat. So I've been talking about you. Have you been listening to your exploits on the air?
No, I've been sleeping.
Oh, you slept through it. Well, we talked about how on Tuesday you fronted for and did a lot of cooking and then served food to a dozen or more people outside the library while I signed them up for claim forms against the city. Talked about your today going over to the St. Francis Soup Kitchen area and advising people of their opportunity to file those claims and providing coffee and, I guess, possibly brownies?
Yes, brownies.
So,
Irish cream-flavored ones this time.
Which flavored ones?
Irish
coffee-flavored ones? Are these intoxicated brownies? Do you have a license?
No, they're just sugar-free syrup.
Oh, no Irish brandy or anything of that sort?
No, I would never, for people that are recovered or have that addiction.
I would hope not, for God's sake.
No, I get my fun from helping people and doing art and holding origami cranes.
Right.
So I never need any extra stimulation.
That's good. So you were at the St. Francis Soup Kitchen. How long were you there for, and when did you show up? I know this is a meal every weekday at noon there, right?
Yeah. I was terrified there because I guess the neighbors have tried to shut them down and the businesses, because that's basically what I saw. I didn't see houses because they say that they leave all this litter, so they're kind of afraid of their shadow.
Now, who are you talking to?
So
I'm sorry, Pat.
It was the person that is the lead cook.
Let me understand what happened here, Pat. You and Elise came and what, set up a table that was on the sidewalk nearby, or?
No. We ended up going down the end of the street.
So where did you start?
I pulled up into their parking lot.
So you pulled into, well, it isn't their parking lot. I believe it's a public parking lot on Morris Street. That's not a private parking lot.
It was actually on the St. Francis. And so I got questions.
Wait a minute. Unless they've changed their situation, the parking situation on Morris Street is public parking, even though it's adjacent to the St. Francis Soup Kitchen. Has that changed?
Well, it wasn't street parking. There was like a parking lot.
Wow, maybe they've bought the street. It's possible. But I know in times I've been there in the past, and I haven't been there for a couple years, there is a little side street that's adjacent to the railroad tracks. It's called Morris Street. And that is it's not owned by St. Francis. It is a public street, and people can park there, and they often do when they come to the St. Francis Soup Kitchen.
Because this seemed like a part of the property just in front of their building where there was parking on both sides.
Doc Mike here is shaking his head. So I think you've been there recently, Mike?
No, not recently, but I agree with you. It's a public
street. Well, Chris, you were there yourself today, Pat, so maybe you have a... I have to go check it out. So anyway, you initially set up where?
Well, I pulled into what I thought right next to their building was a parking lot.
Right. The street,
and
as I saw.
So I was being questioned. I wasn't on the street. I was off the street, unless that is a street, but it didn't have a sign.
And who
questioned? It was an alleyway.
And who questioned you?
Some guy in this truck, and then Elise went in and talked.
What questions did he put to you?
He kept saying, "Why are you here? Are you here to eat? Who are you?"
And did you tell him, "None of your beeswax, mister, but have a cup of coffee"?
Well, I finally said what we were there for, and then he said, "Well, you better go ask permission."
Oh, now
did
this person identify himself as some employee, or was he sort of a neighborhood busybody?
No, he obviously was a volunteer there, but you know, it was like the Spanish Inquisition.
And what about the what was the attitude of others listening to this?
There was nobody really around because people were either waiting by their car or already inside.
Okay, and how far away were you from the building when this happened?
I was right next to the building.
I see. Well, then you might have been on the property if you actually moved off. If you moved off the out of the car area onto the area next to the building, you might have been on their property. So then you said Elise went in to talk to somebody inside the building?
Yeah, and this person was just like, "Oh, no, go over to Coral Street. Don't even go on the street and do it." And I'm like you. I'm sorry. Are you telling me I can't set up anywhere on a public sidewalk?
So did you have this conversation directly with the person, or did you get this sort of secondhand from Elise?
He came out, and he was talking to me.
Did he say who he was?
No, he didn't. And I just, you know, I let him say, and I go, and, you know, I said I understood his concerns and everything.
What were his concerns? What were his concerns? I'm sorry.
His concerns were we would draw attention from people, and it would reflect on them, and they'd get in trouble for the trash left behind or whatever.
He said specifically, "I don't want you here because you're going to draw attention and you'll leave trash behind"?
Yeah, basically, and we'll get in trouble. Somebody's going to call and complain, and they're going to affiliate us with it.
So, in other words, he actually said this to you. This wasn't what you thought he might be thinking, but he actually used those words.
Yes.
Okay. And so your reaction was to say, "Well, we'll set up on the corner," or some such thing?
Nope. He didn't even want us on Morris Street at all.
But your reaction was to set up on the corner?
Okay. Yeah, because it's a public sidewalk. So we actually set up a little bit down the intersection of River and Morris Street, right behind the bars of the San Lorenzo Garden Company. And I set up the table right behind my car, and I've set up the coffee on the public sidewalk.
So how far away was this from the entrance to the St. Francis Soup Kitchen, the actual
building? Oh, we were like a block away. We were right across from Lloyd's Tire.
Too far away. I mean, if I were doing it, well, I'd probably stay on their property and challenge them to, if they want to try to do a bus, they can do a bus.
But
what I would, you know, I would certainly also, if I were going to retreat to the public sidewalk, I would make it as close as I could. So I would encourage people in the future who are doing this to do that. But tell me more about what happened.
Parking lot.
Tell me more about what happened.
Otherwise.
Sorry. Tell me more about what happened. Having a little trouble interrupting here. Tell me more about what happened. Still having trouble interrupting you. Pat,
tell me more about what happened. Go ahead.
Okay. So I saw that there was a lot of people, and I found a spot, and I set it up, and Elise went down there and announced that we were giving out coffee and brownies and kind of talked a little bit about the court stuff. They let her do that. She didn't go inside, but she talked to the people outside.
And how many people would you say she was talking to? How many people would you say she was talking to?
See her, because she was about a block away.
I'm sorry, how many people did you say she was talking to?
I didn't see her, so I could not tell you that.
I got you. But Elise is a pretty
powerful voice. I know that she can talk to a number of people. I've seen her in meetings. Then what happened? Sorry, hang on a second. We're missing some of this. Then what happened? Go ahead.
Okay. So we set up, and a lot of people did come down, and we caught the people that were waiting at the end. They were really appreciative. They drank, you know, all the coffee was gone and the brownies were gone. I'd say we were out there for an hour and a half at most.
How many people would you say you talked to?
I'd say that we talked to 20.
And did any of them want to show you their citations or sign claims against the city?
They did have them, but they were interested.
I see.
They didn't have their citations.
And then
I talked to them about the recycling.
Uh-huh.
Before we get into the recycling, did you learn anything new about any intensification of stay-away orders or citations, or perhaps a diminution of pressure on these particular areas?
Obviously, there's pressure because they were talking about how evil and hateful and mean the city was. Santa Cruz is, you know, a piece of crap. And
was there any discussion about new stay-away orders that were issued for more than a day by anyone?
Nobody brought that up, but I was kind of letting Elise handle that because they seem, to a stranger, they're not as trusting. But they were happy with the coffee and the brownies,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Any interesting... Go ahead. Say that again.
Yeah, I just try to get an open dialogue and just say that we're fighting, you know, for your rights. And I said I speak at the city council. I kept telling everyone, please come to the Sub Rosa Wednesday from 11 to 1 to our Huff meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you, was there any kind of new information that came out that surprised you from the conversations you had?
It seemed like I especially asked the people, the young men that were black, because it was mostly younger. And I said, do you find, like, any certain cop, you know, target you? One guy withdrew his answer because I think he thought it was a narc. And it turned out that it was Azua over and over. This Azua terrorizes young black men.
And what specifically, did you get any particular accounts of Azua's behavior? And if so, from how many individuals, would you say?
Well, I'd say that there was about 5 young black men that I got. And they were afraid to really talk about it. Because I'm an unknown, you know. You don't tell that kind of stuff to someone you don't know.
You have
to be careful.
What did you actually hear from them, even though they were afraid to talk about it?
I just heard that they get kind of stalked and targeted by this one certain cop.
And
I asked, do you ever feel like you're targeted?
And was this told to you by one of the 5, 2 of the 5, 3 of the 5?
Every single one.
So each individual had a separate conversation with you?
Yes.
Okay. And it's your, it was, it, but none of them used the name Azua.
I didn't do the name, but then I said, is there a certain, like, really tall, and I said, is it Azua? And they go, oh, yes, yes, it is that one. I didn't, you know, prejudge it and say, does Azua?
Did they say they'd been...
I wanted to try.
Did they say they'd been cited by Azua?
Oh, yeah.
And did they say what they'd been cited for?
Smoking, sleeping, the usual anti.
But they didn't
there
mention...
Was one...
Did they mention any stay-away orders?
No, no, that didn't get brought up, but I will make sure to add that to my question, you know, when I ask people.
Right, but they didn't volunteer that there was a stay-away in addition to any of these tickets they got.
They were kind of closed-mouthed because they haven't ever seen me before. In the other places, there's a lot of... It was a crowd that I'd never seen before. You know, I've seen a lot of the people from the crowd, from the Circle Church, and going and speaking up.
Any reports from women about violence out there?
Actually, there was mostly men.
Okay. And
let me tell you this one thing.
Go
that
ahead.
Did come up.
Mm-hmm.
There was this guy who had an e-cigarette, a vapor, and I didn't know that they had outlawed those now, too, in the park. And he said that he thought he had gone, that he was out of the no-smoking area, and an officer waited for him to be in the wrong area to do it, followed him, and then he gave him a citation because even though you couldn't see, the writing on the sign was facing the park. He said he was too close to the sign, so he was still within that area.
Okay.
So I told him to make sure and get his citation that he can probably fight it. And I said, the first step is to get your citation out of...
Commissioner Baskett's court. I don't think he can actually successfully fight it, but if he wants to spend the energy, I think it's always good to push back. And it doesn't usually, it costs time and energy, but it's worth doing. We're talking with Pat Colby, who has been down in the trenches today, giving out coffee and taking accounts from homeless folks. Do you plan to do this again soon, Pat?
Yeah, and this time I want our fearless leader to be there with us so that we could actually...
Fearless leader? You mean perhaps Becky Johnson or possibly...
we all know the one in the bathroom was the teddy bear.
Oh, him. Yeah, well, you never can tell about that guy. So, Pat...
Yeah, because you're the ones, you know, you people really know you, and...
I am the greatest, I have to agree. However, I wanted to ask you, you were mentioning briefly that you've been doing some research around recycling, and of course the issue has been the shutdown of the recycling centers in order to deprive homeless people of an opportunity as well as provide the city with a nasty and inappropriate source of revenue. And you've been communicating directly and asking others to communicate with the state recycling folks in order to file complaints that recycling centers are not available. But I think you had an update and there's some new information coming out on that.
Right. I left the woman I speak to up there that's the head of it, Cassandra, a message last night, like at 8 or 9. And so she called me back today.
Thank you.
And she told me that as of the city saying that the Costco one, they tore down the building fixture that was out of code and they rebuilt there. So she said that her information is being told to her that it's going to be open this Saturday, that they finally got through the permit process, which I'm sure my questioning in Sacramento made the Santa Cruz permit process probably go a little faster. And she said she sent me the hours. So maybe on your Sunday show I'll send you back the email and you can see what the hours are going to be.
That sounds good to me. Pat, I appreciate
you. And then again, always at the end of March, there's going to be a lot of required stores opening because they were violating the convenience zone.
Perhaps you can talk about that, you know, on Sunday in more detail because I'm running short on time. But, I mean, you can give us sort of more extended and you can specify the stores and so forth. I do appreciate your calling in. Any final words?
No, I think that's it. And I think one thing that the people, the folks that I talked to really appreciated that there's people that are even housed that care and are fighting for them.
Well, you certainly care, Pat. And thank you for you know, not only getting out there and doing it, but taking the time to let the rest of us know exactly what's going on.
Okay, no problem.
Thanks, Pat.
Every little bit helps because, you know, we're all in it together.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay.
And we are nearing the end of our show. We have about 15 minutes left, so if you want to call in, 427-3772 is the call-in number, and you can still get on the air. Here's another little musical interlude from Let My People Come called Dirty Words.
What an awful word is cunt. No word could be more blunt. Sounds like a little runt that doesn't have a front. What an awful word is cunt. Vagina is so much more refined. You take one out to China, goes well with Carolina. There's not a word that's finer for the thing we call vagina. Lives beneath a rock, unknown to Dr. Spock. What an awful word is cock. Penis, what a word is penis. It's in a mouth of penis. It's not to be obscene. The thing that was between us is my stout and sturdy penis. What in a word that makes it so unpleasant to be heard? Nothing could be more apt. In a word. Tits, what a lousy word is tits. Like tiny little bits on which nothing ever fits. Like to chop them up to bits. What a lousy word is tits. Breast, that's a word that's best. It's not quite so undressed. And as you may have guessed, don't want the things unless I can call each one a breast. Glit, word is clit, a thing that has a split. In anger it might spit, no cleverness or wit. I hate it more than tits. Bobo, what a scary word is Bobo. Show me what my child is Bobo. Say my and only Bobo. One might not be Bobo. It's bitten by a Bobo. Brick, a thing that's hard and thick. All greasy up and slick. More deadly than a stick. It's truly hard to think. A better word than prick. Was it a word that makes it so unpleasant to be heard? Nothing could be more absurd. There's nothing dirty in a word. Pussy, oh, word this kind of mushy.
Eight.
A job that's pretty cushy.
Oh my God.
And not too bushy.
No.
You lay between one sushi. You could hate a pussy.
I could marry.
Maybe I'm a Nora. That's not the kind of Nora. The version of the horror. All written in the flora. And the ground is what it's for.
My name is Erin Collins.
Go ahead. And
oh, you know, to all the drug dealers and connoisseurs out there, how about a day of free heroin, please? Thank you. Yeah, I won't sell my ass, but I'll give you a big smile and hug.
Fair enough, and thank you very much. Would you like a new bookmark for your book?
Thank you.
All righty, man. So we have a word from Uncle Jim. Go ahead.
I would really like it if somebody from the Democratic National Committee would nominate Leon Panetta for president.
Fair enough. If they're listening to my show, maybe they'll respond.
At his credentials, Secretary of Defense, head of CIA when we got Osama bin Laden, chief of staff for Bill Clinton just before the Monica Lewinsky fiasco. He retired. Before that, he worked for Mr. Clinton as previous chief of staff. He was in charge of the Office of Management and Budget. And remember when we balanced the budget under Clinton? Guess who actually did it?
Let me ask you about
Leon Panetta. He was an Army officer.
Anything local, Jim, that you want
farmer.
To
talk about?
And, of course, Leon Panetta would be serving in the proud tradition of war criminals I have known. Panetta's under Clinton did devastate the welfare system, sending millions into deeper poverty. He has been a supporter of the wars abroad, and he is a local yokel. I guess he's from the Monterey Peninsula area. Obviously, I don't agree with the speaker, but, well, he has his opinion.
Anything local?
No,
how
I mean,
about
here,
Monterey, Leon Panetta?
No, but I mean, here in Santa Cruz,
about used to be our representative.
Right, but on the streets, regarding poor people here.
Fuck poor people here. There's poor people everywhere. I guess you said that before me.
A lot of people.
No.
And fuck poor people is, of course, perhaps the Leon Panetta line, so a Leon Panetta supporter might well say that. Ironically, of course, that's a poor person who's speaking. That's Leather Limbs, Leather Lungs, Jim Purcell, who I've known for 20 years, sort of on and off. He was a supporter of the original protest camp that we had when Homes Not Jails occupied the area across from Stapleton's, when it was before there was this Gateway Shopping Center there, and it was Caltran property. The Santa Cruz Union of the Homeless and Homes Not Jails engaged in protests there, again, trying to establish places for people to sleep, legal places for people to sleep. That was back in 1993. And I think Jim was a part of that, or at least a sympathetic observer. I could be, my memory could be failing me, but I think that was the case. Now, a big supporter of Leon Panetta. What can you say?
No, wait a minute. Robert,
yes.
Are we running?
Sorry?
Do you mind if I quote Jesus Christ? You know what he said?
Go ahead.
The poor you have with you always.
Well, that's nice. I'm trying to change that.
You know what the context was? When Mary Magdalene took...
Fire.
Do I have your attention?
Well, I'm going through the line, man. Sorry. Any reports from the street?
Ain't no justice out here.
Oh, come, Santa Cruz?
Oh, man.
I know better. Thank you. Any street reports?
Just the fact that I have to move around a lot, being harassed for sleeping.
Has that happened to you recently?
Yes.
And when did that last happen?
Last night.
And where did it happen?
Happened right on Pacific Garden Mall.
And
right on the mall, right off the mall.
Describe what happened.
Basically, what happened is I was these people that Santa Cruz hired, first alarm people. I call them kind of Nazis, you know. They're moving everybody around and pushing us all in corners, you know, which I think they should be more housing for.
You're here. And did you get a ticket?
Yes.
And would you like to take that ticket to court?
Yes, but I don't have it with me right now, but I can get a copy of it.
Let me give you a little flyer. This talks a little bit about it.
Okay.
Give us a call if you want to come to the meeting. The meeting is every Wednesday, as I was saying when I gave my little announcement, at 11 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe.
Okay. Thank you.
And we've been talking with?
David Fullerton.
Thank you, David. Sorry about that. Hey, any street reports, Wayne?
Yeah, I got a ticket on the beach, the annual ritual of ticket on the beach for smoking a cigarette.
So you didn't want to miss that ticket on the beach?
Yeah, I was actually expecting it. It's funny, I even told the police officer I knew there was smoking, and I smoked.
Smoking on the beach? That's a fire hazard. You might light the sand on fire.
It was the tall officer and the captain that was helping her train. Had the nerve to say on his way out, because I asked him about, I was telling him about my, not the right to smoke, but I said that I didn't see the sign necessarily. I thought it might have changed. And he goes, well, your breed will be gone soon anyways. I had the nerve to say that.
Charming. Well, here, have a flyer. You can smoke that one later, too.
Right.
Colin Campbell-Clyde, anything you want to say?
Yeah, so I
talked to one of the, I call them the honeybee people, the downtown...
Bumblebees?
The downtown...
Yellow jackets?
Exactly. Hospitality, that's what they call it. The downtown hospitality patrol. They're going to hit you over the head with hospitality. And so he approached me because I was doing art vending. I was selling paintings downtown in one of the assigned spaces for engaging that kind of activity under the new law. And they're color-coded. So there's you can't – see, I was in a yellow one, and he said, oh, you can't sell your painting in the yellow one because the yellow one is for performance. Well, I happen to be live painting right there on the spot. Like, that's one of the things I do to try to kind of set myself apart from the other art vendors is I'm one of the – as far as I know, I'm the only person right now who goes down and paints – Performing artist paints on Pacific Avenue so you can watch the painting unfold as I'm doing it. And so I pointed that out to him. And he said, I basically trumped him. He had to concede, like, oh, okay, I guess that is a kind of performance. And then he said, oh, but you can't have your thing on the ground. So I have to play this little game with them where as long as I have my... my painting propped up to where it's not actually laying on the ground, then technically, but then right after he says this, you know, he's warning me as if, like, you better change this or you could get a ticket by the police. There's all these cops are standing right there, and they just walked past me, didn't even look at me, didn't even say word one, you know, and so it just seemed like a weird thing that, like, the right hand didn't know what the hell the left hand was doing or thinking. And anyway, I'm kind of more or less satisfied with the rectangles because at least we're being provided with some space somewhere where we're allowed to engage in that kind of entrepreneurial activity and run a fucking business. Thank you very much. But the color coding thing seems really symptomatic of the kind of neurosis that you get from the city that who gives a damn cream cheese? Who gives a damn if you're playing music in a yellow box as opposed to a red box? Like, is this something people are losing sleep over? People can hardly afford to live here because you pay the amount for a room for 1 month that in other parts of the country would buy you an entire house for a month. It's just exorbitantly expensive. And, you know, there's so many other just real problems that exist in the society. I don't understand why the city council has been so obsessively focused on micromanaging and regulating people who are trying to make a few bucks selling paintings. And I sold my first original recently, so I did.
How much
just
did you get for it?
I'm not gonna say a price over the air, but the important thing was it was money that I sorely needed, and some guy, really nice family. I